This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
Cue the Foo on a Friday.
Yeah. Buffalo, right?
Is it?
Are they?
Where they're from?
No. Goo Goo Dolls. No. Goo Goo Dolls are from Buffalo. That's right. No.
Buffalo's own Goo Goo Dolls.
Goo Goo Dolls. How many Dallas?
Whenever you listen to a Buffalo radio station and they throw on the Goo Goo Dolls, it's Buffalo's own Goo Goo Dolls.
The Bills run the ball more.
Yeah. It's like only an hour away and they talk totally differently.
I know. How many dollars is that?
Dollars. All right, it's Scott MacArthur, it's Gord Miller, it's your Friday
edition.
By the
way, Buffalo, we love you.
Yes, we do.
We do love you, Buffalo. We're sorry. We're not making fun of you, but, well, kind of are, but...
Well, they're not...
Shouldn't, really.
Chances are they're listening to their own sports talk radio today, Gord, because they're...
Yes.
Their bills were very busy today. You know, I actually didn't want to lead off with this, but since it's a bit of a segue, is there an NFL team... There probably is, but is there an NFL team that has drafted worse than the Bills?
The Raiders would be up there.
Not lately, though.
Not lately, no. But I mean, if you go like
you're talking when Al was still alive.
Yeah, last decade or so. I mean, well,
Derek Carr and Khalil Mack and
but Jamarcus Russell.
Okay, yeah, that's going back a bit. I do agree with you there, though. That was a disaster.
Jacksonville's been pretty bad.
Well, they got Amari Cooper, too, the wide receiver out of Alabama. I mean, they've done well recently.
Lately,
Jacksonville, okay. I'm just saying because Sammy Watkins, who was traded to the L.A. Rams today, fourth overall in 2014.
Yeah. It's and the thing is, for Buffalo, it's not a free agent destination, right? They're not going to get...
Unless they... grotesquely overpay somebody like Mario Williams.
If they drop a safe on you, they're not going to. And so, yeah, so the draft, I mean, the draft is the lifeblood for every team in the NFL, and it is shocking how poorly they've done. Like, it just seems like every time there's a decision between two players, they always make the wrong one.
They are exactly what you don't want to be in the NFL, which is...
Lower middle of the pack.
8-8. Yeah. 7-9, 6-10. And we all know Bills fans, Gord, right? Because they're the closest team in terms of geography, proximity. So there are Bills fans kicking around. And every now and then, it seems like more years than not, they'll tease you in September.
Yep.
Or you'll get to Canadian Thanksgiving, middle of October, and they're 4-2.
Yeah. Then they'll go to Foxborough. And lose like 39.
Or they beat the Patriots in September. They beat the Patriots in September. Here we go. This is it. It's going to be different this year. And then sure enough, some terrible team rolls in. The Jaguars or somebody comes in.
And just throttles them.
And it's like, how come we just gave up a last second field goal and coughed one up to this
team? That's true. Three picks in the fourth quarter.
We beat Brady and the Patriots 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And we were life and death.
I think the other problem they've had is just the instability in management and coaching, too. It just seems like an endless churn of, you know, when Bill Polian was there, they had, but it's hard, right? I mean, I remember doing a thing with Polian here in Toronto at a sports management seminar the primetime sports management seminar, by the way, in November, if you'd like to buy tickets. And
will you be there again this year?
Yeah, we'll be there. Yes.
Okay.
November 12th.
Keynote speaker?
I'm like the master of ceremonies.
Oh, beautiful!
But they have great guests. One of them we did a 1 hour conversation with Bill Polian at lunchtime, and he was sort of the featured guy. And so I talked to him about. We really went in depth about the picking of Peyton Manning, and all that went into that. And I mean, today it's easy to sit there and say that Peyton Manning was the obvious choice over Ryan Leaf. But Polian said that if you had asked the other, I think there were 30 other teams in the league at that time, if you had asked the other 30 player personnel and general managers to rate the two quarterbacks, it was half and half. Like, they agonized about that pick. They went back and watched every single throw of both guys in college. So every throw that each guy made entirely in college, So you're talking over 4,000 attempts probably over 4 years.
It doesn't sound like a particularly fun day.
Well, I think
I got to be honest.
The guy that had to put that together probably didn't have a real fun day.
Fun week?
Yeah.
2 weeks?
So I just need some clips here. I need 40 games worth of passes for Manning and Leaf. But I guess the point is, you know, like on the mental testing, everything else, the physical testing, it's Ryan Leaf.
What?
Like, oh, yeah.
It's the Ryan. Mental testing.
Oh, yeah. What's the test they do? The NFL personality test they do? It sounds like that. What's that?
We'll figure it out.
So anyway, Ryan Leaf aced it.
Leaf aces it. Manning comes up short relative to Leaf.
Yeah. And in terms of strength, speed, you know, making all the throws, Ryan Leaf, like, at the combine, like, knocks it out of the park.
Unbelievable.
So, yeah. So, I mean, it's just, I mean, so it's easy to sit, I mean, and just think about what that meant to those franchises. Right?
Well, the Colts went on and made the playoffs a number of years. They won a Super Bowl with Peyton Manning.
The Wunderlich test. It's Wunderlich.
Wunderlich. There you go. I am familiar with it now that I hear it.
Yeah. But Leaf nailed it, apparently.
That's crazy.
So it's just one of those things where you say, you know, so that franchise, Indianapolis, takes off. Right? And you know, San Diego thrashes around until they stumble into Phillip Rivers.
And they stumbled onto Phillip Rivers because that was a 1-2 draft as well. Yeah. Eli Manning went first overall, and he made it very clear
that he would not go to San Diego.
Not playing for the Chargers.
Yeah.
I remember Archie was involved in that.
So my favorite line was, so there was a lot of talk about Peyton coming out as a junior, right? After his third year in college, they talked about him turning pro. And Archie's mom, or sorry, Peyton's mom, Archie Manning's wife, said, because New Orleans had the first pick that year, said, "I almost lost my husband to New Orleans Saints football. I won't lose my son."
Hmm. That's good.
So, I mean, but just think, I mean, so for the Bills, I mean, it's like you flip the coin, it's tails every time for them.
Yeah, I mean, and you just, I got my brother who's a Dolphins fan, and he says, look, I mean, you can't do anything in the AFC East until Brady and or Belichick goes. There's just, and the, I'm talking, like, this is just, these are just guys shooting the breeze about their teams and stuff. But you just capitulate and just know that the division is going to the Patriots, and you're grinding it out for one of the two available wildcard spots in the conference. And the Bills just have really not been a factor. You remember their last playoff game. And they, of course, are the team now with the longest playoff drought in the NFL.
Yeah.
Was January of 2000. It was the Music City Miracle game. You remember who Buffalo's head coach was? Wade Phillips.
Wade Phillips, yeah.
Jeff Fisher was on the sideline, of course, for Tennessee at the time. But yeah, Wade Phillips was the, and he was the successor, if I'm not mistaken, to Marv Levy.
I think there was one in between.
It might have been one. Okay. Well, I mean, it was awfully close.
Close on the heels. I'm going to look this up.
But the
don't let me typing while I do this. It just seems like the Music City Miracle. Like everything just seems. I mean,
and that was the decision to start Rob Johnson, which was owner influenced over Doug Flutie. I mean, we're sitting here talking about the Bills' last playoff game.
No, Wade Phillips did
Flutie.
Wade Phillips did replace Marv Levy.
Okay.
Then it was Greg Williams. I thought it was Greg Williams, then Wade Phillips.
All right. And then it's been Dick Geron, and it's been...
Well, Mike Mularkey, Dick Geron.
Mularkey.
Perry Fuel, Chan Gailey, Doug Marone, Rex Ryan.
On and on it goes.
So I guess what you look for, what do you sell in sport? You either sell the present or the future, right? You say, if you're the Patriots, we're one of the best teams of all time right now. Or you say, we're coming. We got a great young team.
Another way to put it is you're selling winning or you're selling hope.
Yeah. Or in some cases, you sell the past.
How far does that get you?
We've been a great franchise for, you know what the joke is in Montreal? How many Montreal?
But that doesn't, Gord, that, yes, okay. But that doesn't necessarily work. Like, I'll tell you, because I, personal story, you know, I'm a big 49ers fan.
Yeah.
And Jed York beats the drum, the idiot owner of that team, beats the drum, beats the drum all the time. I talk to my uncle, Eddie DiBartolo, constantly. Well, they don't have, all the reporters out in the Bay Area will tell you, they don't have a particularly strong relationship. He'll drop Eddie's name,
right,
every time that he feels he needs a little bit of public cover.
Right.
I talk to him all the time.
And they'll drag Joe Montana out, or Steve Young at halftime, or, you know, Jerry Rice. The old joke in Montreal is, do you know how many Canadiens fans it takes to change a light bulb?
Shoot.
Two. One to change the bulb, and the other one to tell you how great the old one was.
There are many variations on the light bulb joke.
On that joke. But, yeah, well, TV, how many TV people to take? One. They hold it in place, and the world revolves around that.
There you go.
But in the Bills' case, like, what is their future?
Well, this is it. You know, you're like rebuilding.
What's best case scenario for the Bills this year is what? 9-7 is a home run, isn't it?
9-7, I wouldn't expect that. Yeah. No. But if you look at the way it's all played out for the Bills, you had Rex Ryan dismissed. You had the general manager, Doug Whaley, oversee the draft.
Yeah.
And then after that, Whaley was fired.
Right. And made a significant trade, right? They flopped picks with Kansas City.
Correct.
Right? So I don't understand that. Why teams do that? Like, if you're going to fire the guy, why do you let him run your draft?
Well, it could be because
the disagreement that arose from the draft causes you to fire.
Well, or no, I doubt that. I think it could be that you just don't have your plan in place. I mean, they brought in Sean McDermott to be their new head coach, so he's another first year guy.
Yeah,
maybe he has personnel influence, but.
See, I watched the movie Draft Day, and that seemed to indicate to me, like, when Kevin Costner made that deal with Seattle, are you saying that that's not how it actually works? Are you saying Draft Day wasn't a documentary?
Well, it can't possibly be a true story because Kevin Costner was running the Cleveland Browns.
No, I'm joking. What an awful movie.
See,
what an awful movie.
I watched that on a plane ride once. The Jays were going to somewhere, and I was on a flight, and I watched it. So it...
Terrible.
It killed 2 hours of a long flight.
Terrible movie. Has no relation to the.
It's Hollywood eyes, though. Yeah. You know that.
Yeah. So I'm just.
So many of those.
But why do teams. The other thing they say is, well, if so and so loses tonight, you might get fired. So I've decided I'm going to fire the manager or fire the coach. Oh, they won tonight? Oh, he's competent now. I'm going to keep him. Like, if you're going to fire someone, fire them. Why do you. The Bills thing mystified me. How they went that way?
Right. Well, you know, and the Pegula thing is fascinating too.
Right. Because he's volatile.
He's volatile. He's done so much for that downtown core.
Yep.
Right. And I know you've been down there probably many times.
The Harbor Center. All of
that little hub around the rink. They got the Marriott there, which is fantastic.
He has single-handedly rebuilt downtown Buffalo.
Right. And so he gets points for that.
Yep.
But. He has not presided over much success with either the Sabres or the Bills. No. In his tenure.
No. And what they seem to be, the parallel seems to be that both teams go on reckless spending sprees that don't pan out.
What's a reckless spending spree in the NHL, though, in a cap era?
Ville Leino.
Okay, we're going back a few years
Yeah. Christian Ehrhoff, Ville Leino, Christian Ehrhoff, and Cody Hodgson, between them.
Fair point.
Yeah. The Buffalo Sabres are paying Christian Ehrhoff until 2025, I think. Leino comes off the books, I think, next year. So they were paying over, they're going to pay out more than $30 million to people not to play for them because they went haywire in free agency.
That's like 5-6 years ago now, right? At least?
I think it was Pegula's first year was Ehrhoff.
Right.
Leino was his first year.
They tried to make a splash.
Yeah.
And then that was the end of the Regier era, and in came Tim Murray.
Tim Murray. And then they, you know, went draft.
They were counting on
McDavid draft. They lost two lotteries, right? Yep. They lose Ekblad and get Reinhart. They lose McDavid and get Eichel. Like, just imagine Buffalo, right? Just imagine Buffalo. With Connor McDavid and or Aaron Ekblad.
Changes everything.
I mean, now you're talking about them being the powerhouse, the rising powerhouse in the East.
Eichel's going to be...
He's okay. You know, I shouldn't say...
Oh, he's going to be
good.
Really good.
He's good. He's going to be really good. But McDavid is a generational...
Yes.
...franchise-defining player. Eichel's not...
Who do you like better, Matthews or Eichel?
Matthews.
Agreed.
Yeah, Matthews is a better player. He'll be a better... And I like Jack Eichel a lot, And until he demonstrates a commitment to playing somewhat in his own end, because his disinterest level when the puck's in his own end is pretty high. His grip, his give a crap meter is quite low.
Relatively low.
When the puck is far away from the net.
Yeah.
So that's the issue for him. And the other problem is not a lot around him either. Like that's, I mean, you know, you watch him play and there's just not a lot there. I mean,
I ask this not out of ignorance, but because he's the one player that to me has always made a ton of cake, but doesn't stand out as being great. And that's Ryan O'Reilly. Is he?
So he's overpaid, but he's
a good. There's no question
terrific.
He's a good, good.
He's
or
a
great
really
player.
Good. He's a really good player in a league with no salary cap.
But this goes back to Colorado. Like, well, I can't think of a.
Calgary offer sheeter.
The offer sheet.
Calgary offer sheeter.
But so. I can't think of a player, Gord. And this, I'm not saying the guy's terrible by any stretch of the imagination, but I can't think of a guy who, and the offer sheet was the reason,
yeah.
who got so much so soon. But is not having the impact that a guy at that salary level needs to have.
So it's a bit like, you know what it's like? Brian McCabe, Dion Phaneuf. If they made $4 million, you'd love them. But because they made $6 and $7 million, it's just so much of your cap. And the problem with O'Reilly is, you know, the last couple of world championships, he's been terrific. He's a great two-way player, leads the league in face-off percentage, great penalty killer, can play any forward position. He's terrific. But he makes too much money. So the other problem is, you know, Colorado traded him away and botched that deal like you can't believe. So Colorado gave away a really important player and got nothing back. So as bad as the contract's not great for Buffalo, now the Sabres can afford it because they don't have a lot of other guys making big money. But Colorado couldn't afford to give an important player away like that and not get anything back.
Right.
Grigorenko, terrible. Yeah. You know.
Just kills you.
Yeah. So that's... But O'Reilly's a really, really good hockey player. In a league with no cap, you'd love him.
Yeah. You wouldn't care.
But it's the same as, you know, P.K. Subban in Nashville is overpaid. At $9 million, he's probably overpaid. But Nashville's got Ekholm, Ellis, and Yossi. At a total of $9 million, they can afford Subban. The question in Buffalo is, when they've got to do Eichel and Reinhart and Reese DeLine and all these young players, can you then afford to have Ryan O'Reilly? The issue in Edmonton is not McDavid, so much McDavid and Draisaitl. It's that they've got Lucic and Russell on bad deals.
And this is what I'm saying, Gord, about the Leafs.
Right. So it comes
they
back.
Don't have those
they don't have
restrictive
one
deals yet. But that's the challenge. Right.
The trick.
The challenge is to avoid it.
So everyone gets we should go get this, you know, let's go get this guy. Let's go get that guy. Well, hang on a second. You can't afford one of those bad free agent deals.
I played a hypothetical game with Dave Festchuk last week on this show.
Yeah.
What if the Leafs had landed Steven Stamkos?
Right.
And had the year that they just did.
Right.
We would be in some sort of panic mode over how
because you'd have
the
Stamkos,
big three kids yeah. somehow fit in, and you've got an injury-prone 27 or so-year-old.
Yeah.
Is he a centerman? Is he a winger on a good team?
And it would all be signing bonus, so there'd be no buying him out. And they, you know, it's like John. I get Leaf fans ask me all the time, are we getting John Tavares? You don't need John Tavares.
But he also can't fit into the with everything that's coming.
A, he doesn't fit in the salary structure, and B, you don't need a center. Auston Matthews is your John Tavares.
You need the defenseman.
You need the defenseman. How you get him, where you find him, that's the hard part.
Right.
But going up, the mistake teams make is they go and overpay a guy, and because they pay him $7 million, they think he's a $7 million defenseman. He's not. Just because you put me in the quarterfinals at Wimbledon doesn't make me a quarter finalist at Wimbledon. Makes me a guy you put there.
You right? might have earned it once. Doesn't mean you're going to...
Yeah. So the problem, the Leafs are on the right course, but the hardest thing for them to be is patient right now. Are we going to settle this pizza thing, by the way?
Well, we have to, but we've got
to... No, because I'm really upset.
We've got to take a bit of a break.
You lied to me.
No.
No, you lied to me.
I wait. You will not be disappointed.
It was a lie of omission.
You will not.
You lied to me.
Here's what happened very quickly to set it up, because Gordon and I do need to talk about this, and we need to have an airing. This is like a Festivus episode. Yeah. We have to have an airing of the grievances, apparently, on the air.
Yes.
I was an idiot. All right. And a lot of sentences start that way. But we were doing our Proline best bets last night, and I said, and
I Gord killed says, it, by the way.
And Gord says, well, Dodgers. why don't you pick. One of your three games, the Eskimos and Red Blacks. Right. And I said, well, I can't because the industry odds have apparently changed. It's not available on the website. So he says, well, he says, okay. And I move on to the baseball. But then I gave him a hot take. And I said, well, the Red Blacks are going to win the game. And you're like, no, they're not.
No.
So then you say you want to make a bet.
We bet.
Turns into a pizza bet.
Yeah.
So you're upset about something. Presumably that the pizza isn't here yet.
No.
I'm promising you it's going to arrive.
The pizza arrives every Friday no matter what.
The pizza has arrived.
No, but it arrives anyway.
The pizza has been
paid. Who paid for it? Who paid for it?
Me.
You did not.
I absolutely did. See? He's waving.
Is that true, Tyler? So you actually
I'm telling you, if this was a 2-4-1 delivery day, there'd be 6 Zaws and 4 boxes of wings out there.
Oh, I thought this was a 2-4-1 delivery day.
No, there's going to be 1 2-for-1 pizza. It's going to have, and we need to talk about your topping choices too, by the way. This is
fantastic topping.
Certifiable.
That's not good, eh?
No.
Fantastic.
There was a lot of judging of Gordon Miller going on when we found out.
Well, the good thing is I don't care what other people think.
There you go. All right, we'll talk about it on the other side. And also, Dominique Foxworth, formerly the NFLPA president, currently with ESPN and the Undefeated, is going to join us. Zeke Elliott gets 6 games. Jerry Jones, not happy about it. We'll get into that. And a few other NFL details with Dominique on the other side. Stay with us. It's Overdrive. Scott MacArthur, Gord Miller. You're listening to TSN 1050 and streaming us on the TSN Go app. All right, so we have some things to get to.
That's 22 top, isn't it? You know that famous story?
Yeah, we're not on good terms right now, Gord. We have to fix some things here. Kevin Seifert is going to be with us in a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
He's from ESPN, so that's a bit of an audible. Huh? Interesting use of the football term
well
there.
Well done.
Talks
good
football.
Segue.
All right. So I believe an apology is in order. Because before the break, you accused me of not coming through.
Well,
and I told you.
I had heard, and I should have checked this out, that pizza was delivered every Friday from 2-4-1.
Which
is not the case, apparently.
Apparently not, which is okay.
So you have paid for this pizza.
I have purchased.
You purchased this pizza.
Your Eskimos.
Not beat, my Eskimos. The Eskimos.
The Eskimos. Well, you're an Edmonton guy or no?
Yeah, I don't care. But
okay. They were your Eskimos last night.
No, I saw the opportunity for you.
There was pizza on the line.
You had the 1-5-1 team against the 6-0 team, and you took. You know,
I had the defending Grey Cup champions. That's how I looked at it.
Don't live in the past.
Never. The immediate past.
The immediate past. I apologize. Unreservedly, for accusing you of not coming, of riding the coattails of a free pizza promotion.
Yes. I did not do that.
You paid for this pizza. It's delicious, by the way.
Now, we very quickly need to discuss the toppings.
Fantastic. Tomato, mushroom, black olives. Fantastic.
And as you texted me when I asked you an hour ago, as I prepared to order this.
Mm-hmm. Really good.
Why? Yeah, no, yeah, that's you're literally eating it right now.
In the spirit of the O-Dog.
You have no concerns that anybody is going to dive in and rip a slice or two off.
Offered it around. Nobody wants it.
With that selection, you're
no
safe.
God.
No, and you know what's funny is I'm sure when they were making it, they said, what's missing? Like, this can't be the right order.
Oh, they're staring at that bill 4 or 5 times going,
who would order this?
When we arrive at the door, what are we going to see? Now, we're delivering
and
it.
And they saw Tyler.
They're delivering it to an office, right? Yeah. A studio. But I think if somebody orders that from home.
I got to say, it's really good.
Somebody's ordering that from home, you're getting the guy in the bathrobe at the door.
Oh, yeah. If you're lucky. If you're lucky, he's got
right.
the bathrobe on.
Yeah, hopefully it's done up.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you enjoy that.
I will. It was good.
We're going to hit traffic and a SportsCenter update here, and then we're going to welcome Kevin Seifert from ESPN to the program. Zeke Elliott of the Dallas Cowboys gets 6 games. When this is all said and done, will it be 6 games? He can appeal, and maybe it gets reduced. And I'm sure there's a Ray Rice tie into all of this as well. Six games for some domestic violence and other off-the-field incidents for Zeke Elliott. And oh, by the way, Gerald Wayne Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, not happy about it. We'll get into that. We'll get into the big Bills trade today, a bunch of other things going on in the NFL, including Mitch Trubisky's big preseason debut for the Bears. Stay with us. It's Overdrive. Scott MacArthur, Gord Miller, TSN, and the TSN Go app. The Gord Miller pizza count is on. What are you, two in?
Two slices in. I got people coming for dinner tonight, too. I shouldn't eat too much.
What are you going to do with that, then? Because nobody else is going to eat it.
Bring it home. Cold pizza in the morning. There's nothing better than a cold tomato, black olive, and mushroom pizza in the morning.
Because, Gord, the good guy would have thought, forget a more conventional pizza. And a bunch of people might be able to get their hands in there, and we all finish it off as a team. See?
I'm a TV guy, Scott. We're all in this alone. We are all in this alone.
So what is that. Is that breakfast tomorrow? Is that
lunch? I'll be lunch tomorrow.
Lunch tomorrow.
Yeah, probably.
All right.
Maybe dinner, too.
Yeah, depends on how much you have over the noon hour. It's Scott MacArthur and Gord Miller. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050. You're streaming us on the TSN Go app. Zeke Elliott. It's kind of tough to figure out what is the top story in the NFL today with the big Buffalo Bills moves. Less so the Mitch Trubisky debut for the Chicago Bears preseason last night, although it was very good. But certainly Zeke Elliott would be at the top of the list. Suspended six games by the NFL for a variety of different off-field incidents that he's had in the last 18 months or so. To talk about that.
Specifically to the allegations
of domestic
violence.
Right. And there's some other stuff going on there. We know that Jerry Jones, at least publicly, isn't happy. To talk about that and so much more, from ESPN, Kevin Seifert is with us. Kevin, happy Friday. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Busy day in the NFL, as always, on Fridays, it seems.
I don't think, and I know we're into the preseason now. I say this about every league, Kevin. I don't think there's an off season anywhere anymore. There's just a period of time when games aren't being played.
Right, and now we've even gotten into the game-playing part, so we have that on top of the fact that massive off-field news stories are popping up daily.
So what do you make of the six games for Elliott, first of all?
Well, when the domestic violence policy portion of the personal conduct policy in the NFL was changed in 2014, the six games was established as the baseline that for first offenders. That's where the NFL would start if it decided you had been involved in domestic violence, and then it would look for any extenuating circumstances on either side to determine whether there should be more or less. More often than not, they found reasons to reduce it from six, but in this case, they said they uncovered physical evidence in terms of photography and digital texting and that sort of thing that proved to them that there had been multiple cases of physical violence between Ezekiel Elliott and a woman he was intimate with at the time. And also there had been an issue where he had pulled up the shirt of a woman during a St. Patrick's Day party parade as well in March. And so, which the league said created a pattern of disrespect towards women. So you put all that together, and you can certainly see, at least from the NFL perspective, why they didn't feel compelled to come down from the baseline six games.
Kevin, it's worth pointing out, though, that he has not only convicted of a crime, but won't be charged with one. The prosecutors determined that there was not the basis to press charges. So he's being suspended for six games, but not being charged criminally.
Yeah, and that's something that was made explicit by the NFL, again, when this policy was rewritten, that regardless and independent of whether there were any legal consequence of an action or an accused action, that the NFL reserved the right to investigate it on its own and determine whether the personal conduct policy had been violated. And the NFL is not bound by the laws of the Constitution in terms of whether you can be employed by them or not. They have a much lower threshold than the presumption of innocence until proven guilty. And so they are able, under the policy as it stands, to levy a legal punishment and discipline against a player regardless of whether a prosecutor decided whether or not to press charges.
With Kevin Seifert of ESPN talking all things NFL, Zeke Elliott at the top of the list. Do you expect him? He's got 3 days to make a decision. Do you expect Elliott to appeal?
Oh, yeah. I think he's already indicated that through some statement, a pretty direct statement from his attorneys in which he said the NFL had cherry-picked testimony and had a lot of inaccuracies and other problems with the issues. So you can see where they are laying the groundwork for a significant appeal. And beyond that, you know, remember, don't forget during Deflategate and other NFL issues that came up, legal lawsuits were filed as well. I'm not saying that that's going to happen here, but certainly the presence of attorneys and attorney statements and a detailed response as was given today suggests that it's not simply going to be the usual 10-day arbitration process and then move on.
Okay, so based on that, and I think I'm asking you to guess here, but do you think it ends up being six games, or could there be a reduction here?
I guess I'd be surprised if the arbitration portion, you know, the actual appeal that would be held either before Roger Goodell, who issued the punishment, or through someone who Roger Goodell designated to represent him, whether that arbitration would overturn it or reduce it. There have been instances where that's happened, but the amount of information that was in and document and what the NFL feels is documented evidence that's in the release that they put out today suggests they feel very confident in their case. And so the early guess, and it really is a guess, is that he won't have a whole lot of success in his appeal, which brings to light the possibility of taking it beyond that.
We're with Kevin Seifert of ESPN. Kevin, Jerry Jones, the Cowboys owner, isn't happy about this. Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, didn't like the Brady suspension. Tom Benson, the owner in New Orleans, didn't like the Bountygate suspensions. Is Goodell in any danger here of allowing a coalition of angry owners to form against him and maybe turf him out?
It's possible. I mean, I think all the owners like it when it happens to the other guy. So I, you know, and then all of a sudden it happens to them and they realize that, hey, this is no fun. There was, on a lesser level, probably, I think Clark Hunt from the Kansas City Chiefs should be thrown in there as well. They were docked some draft choices because of a tampering situation that they were very upset about last year. And so, you know, I think Jerry Jones was probably very satisfied with the way that Roger Goodell went about the Patriots, the Patriots Deflategate thing. I didn't hear a whole lot of disputing coming from him then. And so, it's one of those things where, like, you don't even think that it could turn around and what you would think to be an incomplete or unfair process would be applied towards you and your team and your team's competitiveness. So you never know if those guys will all, it'll always be 31-1, or whether some of these guys will bind together. And Jerry Jones is the one owner probably in the league who has been able to will things on his own to happen, whether it was moving to Los Angeles or television negotiations. You know, Don Van Natta from ESPN has had some wonderful stories about the way Jerry Jones has directed the league's business side for a long time here. He even was able to finagle his own marketing arm where he gets all the revenue from Cowboys sales as opposed to sharing it with the rest of the league. And so if there's any owner who on his own single-handedly could in a huff run the commissioner out of there, it would be Jerry Jones, but I don't know that is where it's going.
What is Elliott allowed and not allowed to do over the 6-week suspension, Kevin?
Yeah, he basically can't be at the facility, and so he'll have to go. I mean, he could stay in Dallas, but he'd have to go get his workouts in somewhere else. He can't have contact with the team. At least from a football perspective, there can be some counseling that goes on and that sort of thing if it's necessary and called for. But he basically, from the day that the 53-man roster, assuming that the appeal doesn't change anything, from the day the 53-man roster is formed around Labor Day until the end of the week where the Cowboys play their sixth game, which is actually at the end of week 7 because of bye, he can't be involved with any team activities.
Kevin, just to wrap things up, I want to switch gears and talk about the Buffalo Bills. They moved up to draft Sammy Watkins a few years ago and seemed to think he was going to be a mainstay in the organization, traded him today. What do you make of what the Bills are doing?
Well, you know, you could see it kind of coming down the pike, not necessarily a Sammy Watkins trade now, but when they fire the general manager after the draft and they hire a new one right away, and they already have a new coach on hand, and the coach and the GM have a long history together, you can see that they're probably, this happens on most franchises, you bring in a new regime and they start off by trying to untangle the perceived mistakes of the previous regime. And whether you want to call Sammy Watkins a mistake or whether they simply overpaid by trading up for him or what, they made the decision that they weren't going to move forward with him next year on a big contract. So they figured now is the time when he would have the most value, and they were able to get pretty decent value for him. So I'm sure there's some people disappointed in Buffalo and in Toronto who are Bills fans and wondering whether they've given up for this year. I don't know that you can say that yet. They have done a pretty good job of stockpiling draft choices while they try to re-finagle this roster. And with Sean McDermott as the head coach, defense was always going to be the way they were going to win games, and I don't think that's changed. In the end, though, if you decide that you're pretty sure you're not going to move forward with a star or near star player, you might as well get the most value for him that you can. And I think they felt now was the time to do that.
Kevin, sometimes when teams are in real bad ways, they appear incompetent. So I'm going to flip the script here and say, is there potentially some competency here, not just with Buffalo, but also with the Jets, such that tear it down, build it back up, and try to have that time where you become consequential coincide with the anticipated, at some point, retirement of Tom Brady in that division? Am I giving these people too much credit?
Yeah, a little bit, because I don't know that anyone thinks that Tom Brady is anywhere close to retiring, unless they have some inside information that no one else does. I think both teams, for different reasons, decided that the teams that they had configured were not going to challenge, not just for the division with the Patriots, but for a wild card. And so the Jets have done a more dramatic job of tearing it down and making themselves less competitive now. I think the Bills still have a chance to be competitive. Now, know that they're a playoff team right now, but certainly have more of a chance to be competitive than the Jets. But you're right, and this includes the Dolphins too. I mean, nobody's done anything that should make the Patriots concerned that their run over that division is going to change anytime soon. But if they're waiting for Tom Brady to retire, they might need to be on the 5 to 10 year program, I think.
Enjoyed it, Kevin. Thanks so much for jumping on with us.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
Kevin Seifert of ESPN covering the NFL. Gord Miller,
crushing this piece,
is on slice number 3. Now, keep this in mind. He said so last segment. People are coming over for dinner.
Yeah.
You are going to be staring at a plate full of food.
Yeah.
Because you've started, and it's very clear.
And I crushed a steak for my anniversary last night, too.
You can't stop. You and your wife were the only people in this country who missed the third set of the Shapovalov match.
Taped it.
Did you?
Yeah.
PVR'd it?
Yeah.
I love it.
PVR'd
it.
Didn't tape it.
No, I know what you mean.
Recorded it, sorry.
Yeah, recorded it. Yeah. We'll get into that coming up at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. It was epic. Brad Gilbert of ESPN
he's awesome,
going to join us.
Brad Gilbert's fantastic.
Fantastic. He started calling Shapovalov Shapstick.
Shapstick, because you can't say Shapovalov.
Yeah. Sorry. Tyler's in my ear. Shapshot? Canadiana. You know, they know how to play to the audience, the local crowd. Nestor beat Edberg in Vancouver at the Davis Cup in 92. Shapovalov over Nadal in Montreal last night. Those have got to be the two biggest Canadian tennis moments on Canadian soil. Maybe ever, certainly in the men's game. We'll get into all of that to kick off the 5 o'clock hour of Overdrive. Gord will keep eating his pizza during the break. You stay
really
with
good.
Us.
Really good.
Sound Wars next. Overdrive, Scott MacArthur, Gord Miller, TSN 1050, the TSN Go app.
It's time for a TSN 1050 sound war.
Whoa, I didn't get that one!
This is the worst one for sure.
It's 4:52, you're listening to Overdrive, and it is time for another TSN 1050 Sound Wars. But first, the winner from today's Sound Wars battle between Rourke getting his tits lit and J-E-T-E Jets is...
Rourke got knocked out in the third inning.
Rourke's been getting his tits lit.
He really has.
The best. And it won 69% to 31%, so it advances. And so now, the best sound bites, once again, come up, and it's down to the Sweet 16. You get to decide which one survives this TSN 1050 Sound War, which is brought to you by Old Tomorrow's new Lighter Up Light Lager. This is on-air moment seed number 1 versus seed number 9. On-air moment number 1, Overdrive, reacting to O-Dog getting caught with a hot mic on TSN's trade deadline coverage.
We want to get Brent's feedback. He covers the Senators on a regular day on the Curtis Lazar trade to Calgary. Brent.
Is there ketchup on that?
Oh my God,
that's the worst thing I've ever heard in my life.
All right, I'll keep it together. On-air moment number 9, Sam Mitchell carving the Overdrive guys for their attempt to go from couching to 10K.
Here is Sam Mitchell. How you doing, Sam?
I'm doing good, guys. I'm just sitting here laughing at you fools for out here trying to run a 10K.
Why could you run a 10K?
Do like everybody else with common sense. Write a check.
Sam, how long do you think it took me to run the 10K?
I thought you would still be running it right now, to be honest with you.
Dude, go to hell, man.
All right, go to TSN1050.ca, click on Sound Wars, and vote for your favorite on-air moment. Seed number 1, is there ketchup on that? Or seat number 9, Mitchell ripping Overdrive's 10K. Voting for this Sound War closes Monday at 8 a.m. Listen to Naylor and Landsberg in the morning for the results and for the start of a new Sound Wars battle on TSN 1050. Sound Wars is brought to you by Old Tomorrow's new Lighter Up Light Lager at select Loblaws grocery stores. Dennis Shapovalov with a historic win. Such a young kid, too.
Yeah.
Beating Nadal. We're going to get to it. Brad Gilbert of ESPN will join Gordon Mee next. Hour number 2 of Overdrive starts now. Stay with us. TSN 1050, the TSN Go app.